I grew up in a trailer park in small town Louisiana. I had a pretty okay childhood, but then I moved to Chicago for college. For the first time, I was away from my tiny town, and I realized how many things I'd been missing. Chicago had so much to offer. The nightlife, the restaurants, the opportunities to meet people. For the first time, I was actually happy. At 19, I finally got my first boyfriend, Dave. I'd always been a plus-sized girl, and down in Louisiana, all the single guys ignored me. But in Chicago, there were plenty of eligible men who could look past my weight and love me for me. Dave and I worked together for a couple of years. I really thought he was the one. We were comfortable talking about anything. But whenever he asked about my childhood, I always changed the topic. Honestly, I was a little embarrassed by my white trash past. Dave didn't even know that he was my first real boyfriend. Last year, Dave and I both graduated. We had the summer off before we started our new jobs, so he suggested that we take a trip down to Louisiana so he could see where I grew up. I was really against the idea, but eventually, I just gave in. He booked our tickets, and then I booked the hotel rooms because I did not want us to stay at my parents' house. Dave grew up in Chicago, so he was shocked at how small my hometown was, in a good way. He said it was charming, like he was visiting a foreign country or something. We checked into our hotel, and then I gave him a tour around our main street. The whole time, he kept asking me when I was going to introduce him to my family and friends. We met my parents and brothers for dinner on our second night there, and everyone was surprised that a big girl like me could land a guy as handsome and successful as Dave. They seemed really happy for us, though. The next day, Dave kept asking me to introduce him to my old friends. I'd lost touch with everyone, and more importantly, I didn't want them to tell Dave about what a loser I was back in high school. He stopped pressuring me, but I could tell that he was disappointed. On the third day, we went to the town's only diner for lunch. Thankfully, it was completely empty except for us and the waitress. We ate together, and I got to expose Dave to a real southern diner for the first time. Things were going really well until Ruth Ann walked in. Ruth Ann was my best friend throughout middle school and high school. We used to do everything together. But once I moved away, I realized that our relationship had been pretty toxic. In school, she played really cruel pranks on me almost every day. She'd make fat jokes constantly. She was always thin and beautiful, and I think she used me as her ugly fat friend to make her seem like a good person. Ruth was the last person I wanted to run into. I hid my face, hoping she wouldn't see me. But of course, she noticed me right away and walked over. "Becky!" she screamed. "Is that really you?" I had to acknowledge her and introduce her to Dave, who seemed thrilled to finally meet one of my old friends. Ruth sat next to me in our booth, acting like we were still best friends. I could tell she was really playing it up, because she wanted to impress my boyfriend. She started telling him a bunch of embarrassing stories about my childhood, leaving out all the parts where she was the reason I'd embarrassed myself. I just sat there, holding my tongue. Then she started telling Dave the one story I didn't want him to hear. When we were seniors and she tricked me into skinny dipping with her and then arranged for someone else to steal my clothes, I'd never been more embarrassed in my life. Dave seemed completely wrapped up in the story. He and Ruth laughed together, completely ignoring how uncomfortable I was. The lunch went on and on, though I barely said a word. Dave kept asking Ruth questions, which led to more embarrassing stories about me. They were really hitting it off. The way Dave looked at Ruth was almost flirtatious. I couldn't believe it. She was trying to steal my boyfriend from me, and it was working. We'd already finished eating, so I told Ruth it was great to see her, but that we had to go. Then Dave asked her, "We're going to hang out at our hotel if you want to join us." "Of course I would," Ruth answered. She wrapped her arm around my shoulder, and I felt like throwing up. "It's been so long since I've gotten to spend time with my best friend." The three of us left the restaurant and walked through Main Street. Ruth and Dave continued talking and flirting while I kept silent. I knew this trip was a bad idea. Before we got back to our hotel, we passed by the creek where I'd been forced to skinny dip all those years ago. I couldn't even look at it without having a panic attack. Then Dave stopped walking. He pulled Ruth aside and whispered something in her ear. She giggled and said, "That's brilliant." I asked what they were talking about, and Dave said, "No one's around, so I think we should try skinny dipping again, like you did when you were kids." I'd finally had enough. "No," I screamed. "I'm going back to the hotel right now." I started to storm off, but when I looked over my shoulder, I saw that they weren't moving. "We'll meet you back at the hotel then," Dave said, already pulling off his shirt. Ruth smiled mockingly at me. I turned back around and kept walking so that they couldn't see me cry. I went back to the hotel alone, furious. Even though I just had a big lunch, I ordered a bunch of room service to drown my sorrows. I ate and ate, thinking about how Dave had betrayed me. I told myself that once he got back, I'd break up with him. If he was going to treat me like this, then I didn't want him in my life. Hours passed until the hotel door finally opened and Dave walked in. He was fully clothed, but his hair was still dripping wet. "Where's Ruth?" I asked angrily. "Oh," he said casually, "she's not coming back."
"What?"
"Well, I saw right away what a terrible person she was," he explained. "I lured her into the creek and was hoping that she'd come back and steal her clothes, just like she'd done to you. I thought we were on the same page. I gave you a look."
"So you didn't like her?"
"Of course not," he said. "Wasn't that obvious?" "No, it wasn't at all. It looked like he was full on flirting with her, but I guess that was just part of his plan." "Apparently you didn't get the hint," he said, "so I had to improvise. I hope that's okay."
"I don't understand. Where's Ruth?"
"Oh, she drowned," he said casually. "What a shame." Then he walked closer and wrapped me in a tight, passionate hug.
"Did you?"
I started to ask, but I couldn't finish the sentence. I wanted to know if my boyfriend had murdered someone, but I didn't have the courage to ask. He understood what I was trying to say, though.
"Maybe,"
he answered coyly. Then he changed the subject to our plans for the rest of the evening. The next morning, my oldest brother called me with the news. He said that Ruth's body was found floating face down near the pig slaughterhouse. That was when I knew that Dave had told me the truth. Ruth Ann, my former best friend, had made my life miserable, and my boyfriend had drowned her because of it. When I got off the phone, Dave asked me what was wrong.
"She's dead," I told him.
"I hope I didn't overstep. I just wanted you to be happy." He paused. "Are you? Are you happy?" I should have felt horrified, but the only feeling I had was absolute pure love. "Thank you, Dave."
Angela and I became friends in kindergarten on the playground. Every recess, we would sprint to the swings to claim them before anyone else. Swinging back and forth, she became my best friend. Even as a small child, I cherished our friendship. She glowed with joy and would infect other people with her lighthearted spirit. I felt lucky someone so kind wanted to be my friend. All that changed when we were 16 and her mom took her own life. It's like this darkness took root in her after she found her mom dead in the bathtub. Losing a parent would be hard for anyone, let alone how she lost her mom. So I tried to be there for her. I tried to be patient, knowing that grief is a complicated process. I never imagined it would turn my once glowing friend into a monster. I remember watching Angela at the funeral. Her once bright blue eyes now looked like an empty dull gray. She sat slumped over in the pew, staring at her feet the whole time. Her dad patted her back to comfort her, but she never cried. It felt like she was somewhere else. She checked out entirely. When I tried to talk to her afterward, she walked past me like she never knew me. She withdrew from me completely. Her sister would let me know how she was doing from time to time because she knew I cared. Her family was concerned she was pushing me away along with her other friends. Honestly, I thought I just needed to be patient, and she would return to me in time. As weeks passed, Angela's actions grew more and more concerning. She seemed to be taking her mom's death harder than everyone else, which is fair since she's the one who found her. Can you imagine a more terrible thing? Everyone was worried about her. She started to disappear for hours, only to reappear like she never left. Angela tried hard to fake it and hide her grief, but You could see the pain in her eyes. Her family grew more uneasy as she started to develop a fascination with the occult. It started with her getting into New Age spiritualism, but quickly morphed into something more sinister. None of us anticipated how sinister this new hobby of hers would become. Her sister said Angela covered the walls in her room with weird markings, and she would hear her chanting in another language late at night. Around this time, I started having nightmares every night. I would be walking in a room shrouded in fog. I would turn around and see nothing but darkness and fog. Sometimes figures in the fog would approach me. The disturbing part of these dreams is that everyone ended with Angela rushing out of the fog to grab me. I would wake up haunted by her face, creepy grin, and empty eyes. The dreams went on for weeks. My birthday approached, and to my surprise, Angela reached out to me about doing something together. I was ecstatic. I thought my patience paid off, and I would have my friend back. The dreams made me a little uneasy, but they were just dreams. Maybe I had them because I missed her. I texted her sister because I thought her reaching out to me was proof that she was healing. Her sister was surprised she reached out to me, but agreed that this was a step in the right direction. Angela told me she had the whole night planned. She wanted to go to this new Mexican restaurant she heard good things about. She knows Mexican is my favorite. Angela asked if I wanted to invite anyone else, but I told her I was happy with just her. I didn't want to overwhelm her after she isolated herself from everyone. The day came and the night felt heavy under the blood-red moon. I remember thinking, "How fun! It's a full moon!" I went to the address Angela gave me and it led me to an abandoned warehouse. The place had one lamppost that illuminated the barren area. It was in the middle of nowhere. I stood by the lamppost looking around for Angela. The longer I stood there, the more it felt like the darkness became thicker around the circle of light. All I could hear was the rusted doors of the warehouse swaying in the wind. Out of the darkness, I heard footsteps on the gravel road. "Angela?" I called out, my voice echoing into the dark. There was no response, just the sound of the old metal doors. I pulled out my phone to text Angela. She must have sent me the wrong address or something. Just as I was about to dial her number, a chill ran down my spine. I could tell something was off, but I wanted to trust Angela. Then, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a figure in the shadows. My pulse quickened as I strained to make out any details of the figure. "Angela? Is that you?" I called out again, my voice trembling. Again, no response. I hesitated between running back to my car and trying to figure out what was going on. I summoned all my courage to take a step into the darkness. The figure remained still. "Angela, this isn't funny," I said. And then, just as suddenly as it had happened, the figure melted back into the darkness, leaving me alone at the abandoned warehouse. My heart pounded as I stood there, trying to understand what had just happened. Was Angela playing some kind of prank? I glanced around, half expecting the figure to reappear at any moment. Maybe Angela would come running up behind me to scare me. But I remained alone, deserted. With a shaky sigh, I pulled out my phone again to call Angela. It rang once, twice, before going to voicemail. "Angela, where are you?" I said, trying to keep the panic out of my voice. "Something weird just happened. Call me back, okay?" I hung up, my mind racing with 1,000 questions. What if something happened to Angela? What if she was in trouble and I was just standing here doing nothing? I looked at my phone again and called Angela's sister. "Carol?" her sister said into the phone.
Hi. Sorry to bother you. Did Angela mention to you what she had planned for tonight? She gave me an address to an abandoned warehouse. I just have a bad feeling."
Her sister was silent for a moment.
"Can you text me the address?"
"Of course," I responded.
"Can you let me know if you find Angela? We haven't seen or heard from her all day." "Yeah, I can do that."
Her sister ended the call.
As I looked up from my phone, I saw a silhouette by the old metal doors waving me down. Relief washed over me as I sprinted towards her, calling out her name. "Angela! Thank God, I was so worried!" I gasped for breath. Right as I was about to reach her, she disappeared into the warehouse. Something told me not to follow her, but I had to see what was going on. It was dead silent as I walked into the warehouse. I tried to listen for breathing, but there was nothing. Just as I was fully in the warehouse, something hit me on the back of the head. Everything went black. I awoke on the floor with hands and feet bound. My eyes slowly pieced together the scene. Angela was beside me, hunched over with her back to me.
"Angela, what's going on?"
I asked. I looked around to see markings on the floor. It made no sense to me at all. I was in the middle of it. I pulled on my restraints, but Angela apparently knew how to tie a knot. She turned her head to look at me. She didn't say anything. She just sat there with a strange smile playing at the corner of her lips. It was a smile that sent shivers down my spine, a smile that held no warmth or sincerity.
"Angela, please," I said. "You're scaring me."
But she just kept smiling, her eyes glinting with an unsettling light. She stood up and started chanting something in a different language as she walked around, lighting candles scattered around me. With the light from the candles, I could see more. She had a knife and a composition notebook with inconsistent scribbles all over the pages. I could only make out a few words. "Mom, sacrifice, blood moon." My stomach churned. Did she plan on sacrificing me?
"What are you doing?"
I whispered, but she didn't respond. She was entranced with her chant. She sat at my feet meditating, still chanting. At that moment, I realized that I lost the friend I had once cherished. Tears crowded my eyes.
"This won't bring her back," I tried to tell her. "This won't work. Please, Angela, untie me."
I pulled at my restraints, but that only tightened them around my wrists and ankles. Angela continued her chant. She opened her cold, empty eyes and turned her attention towards the knife. She picked up the knife and lifted my shirt to expose my belly. I began to struggle more against my confinement. She started to carve a star onto my stomach, still chanting. I screamed as the knife cut into me. My blood oozed out of her markings. As she was about to make markings on me, I heard the metal doors creak open.
"Angela?"
It was Angela's father. Hearing his voice, she snapped out of her chant. Her eyes shifted between my stomach and her dad's voice. Her dad rounded the corner and saw Angela beside me, laid out. He started to cry.
"Angela, baby, what are you doing?"
He was exasperated.
"Put the knife down, sweetie. Let's talk about this."
"It's the only way,"
Angela screamed.
"Then there is no way,"
her dad said as he slowly approached her. Once he was close enough, he grabbed her hand with the knife and took it from her. Angela began to sob.
"But it's the only way. It'll work. I know it will."
Her dad shook his head and pulled her into a hug. He looked at me and nodded before walking off with Angela. It wasn't long until her dad came back to cut me free. He apologized profusely and explained that he and Angela's sister were taking her to a mental hospital for care. They didn't know she was this far gone. After things calmed down, I asked her sister why Angela chose me, or if she knew anything. Her sister told me she looked through Angela's notebook with erratic scribbles, and it seemed like she had to sacrifice someone important to get her mom back. Her sister theorized that I was the next most important person to Angela after their family. Angela couldn't lose any more family, so I was the one she had to sacrifice.
It was a beautiful Saturday morning, and my husband Mark and I decided to take a trip to our local IKEA. We needed to purchase some new furniture for our guest room. and we were both excited to see what deals we could find. As we made our way through the maze-like store, I couldn't help but notice how eerily quiet it was. Despite the many displays and furnishings, there were very few customers around. It was almost as if we had the whole store to ourselves. We did not exactly find what we were looking for: a comfortable bed, a matching dresser, and a nightstand. Mildly disappointed, we started walking toward the exit. But something caught my eye: a small, unmarked door. I turned to Mark. "Hey, do you want to check that out?" He shrugged. We made our way over to the door and pushed it open. Inside was a dimly lit staircase that led down to what seemed like a basement. The air was musty and cold, and I shivered involuntarily. Mark took my hand. "Are you sure you want to do this?" I nodded. "Yeah, let's see where this goes." We descended the staircase and found ourselves in a long, narrow hallway. The walls were made of cinder blocks, and there were no windows or doors in sight. The only light came from a few flickering fluorescent bulbs overhead. As we walked, I felt a growing sense of unease. There was something off about this place, something sinister. But I couldn't put my finger on what it was. Mark told me to turn back, but I didn't want to. I wanted to see the end of it. What secret could be lurking beneath the store? Why did they need such a door? What was going on? I wanted to know and figure it out. Mark didn't seem to press harder either, so we kept going. A few steps later, we turned a corner and came face to face with a group of men. They were all dressed in black, and their faces were hidden behind ski masks. They looked like they were up to no good. Mark and I tried to hide, but it was too late. The men had seen us, and we couldn't run anymore. Fear crept into my skin, and I stared at my husband to do something. But at the same time, I knew it was my fault that we were both in trouble and in the midst of what looked like wicked men. One of them stepped forward and asked with a gruff voice what we were doing down there. It was impossible to say that we got lost. We sensed that it would be ridiculous to make any excuses, so Mark and I remained silent. The man looked us up and down and said that we had trespassed and they couldn't let us go back. He motioned to one of the men with him and asked him to take us to the boss. It scared me to realize that what was going on seemed to be more than met the eye. The men grabbed us roughly and led us down the hallway. We had no choice but to follow. We didn't know what they wanted from us, but we knew it couldn't be good. After what felt like an eternity, we reached a large metal door. The men pushed us inside, and we found ourselves in a massive room filled with stolen goods. TVs, computers, jewelry, you name it. It was like something out of a heist movie. In the center of the room sat a man, the boss. He was older, with a receding hairline and a thick beard. He looked us up and down, his eyes cold and calculating. "What brings you here?" he asked. Mark and I chose silence and only stared in fear and disbelief. What was going to happen to us now that we had discovered some criminal's lair? He leaned back in his chair. "Well, I don't think you'll be leaving anytime soon." Mark stepped forward. "What do you mean? We didn't do anything wrong." The boss chuckled. "You're in the wrong place at the wrong time. And now you're my prisoners." He motioned to his men. "Lock them up." The men dragged us away, and I knew that we were in deep trouble. We were stuck in this nightmare, trapped in a criminal's lair, and all because we decided to explore a mysterious door in IKEA. The room they threw us in was small, dark, and dank. The only source of light came from a small barred window high up on the wall. There was no furniture, no bed, nothing. Just cold, hard concrete. Mark and I huddled together in a corner, trying to stay warm. I couldn't believe this was happening. It felt like a bad dream. But unfortunately, it was very real. "What are we going to do?" Mark whispered. I shook my head. "I don't know. We have to find a way out of here." We searched the room, hoping to find something that could help us escape. But there was nothing. No hidden doors, no loose bricks, nothing. As we sat in silence, I heard footsteps approaching. The door creaked open, and the boss walked in, accompanied by two of his henchmen. The boss leaned in close. "You're gonna help us with our next job. And if you don't, well, let's just say you won't be leaving this place alive." He motioned to his men. "Bring them." They led us out of the room and back into the hallway. We walked for what felt like miles, deep into the bowels of the building. Finally, we reached a large metal door. Mark and I exchanged a look. We knew we had to find a way out of this, but we didn't know how. The boss opened the door, revealing a room filled with weapons, masks, and other tools of the trade. Suddenly, I had an idea. Mark, grab a gun. When we get to the store, point it at the boss and tell him you're going to shoot unless he lets us go, I whispered in Mark's ear. Mark looked at me. Are you crazy? What if he calls our bluff? We have to take the risk. It's our only chance. Mark nodded, and we waited for our moment. When the time was right, Mark aimed his gun at the boss. Let us go, or I'll shoot. The boss turned, surprised, but then he started to laugh. A shootout ensued, and in the chaos, Mark and I made a run for it. We ran through the store, knocking over displays and dodging bullets. Finally, we made it outside, and we didn't stop running until we were miles away from the store. We called the police and told them everything. They didn't immediately take us seriously, but eventually, they sent a SWAT team to the IKEA. They found the boss and his men, along with all the stolen goods. The men were tried in court, and my husband and I stood as witnesses. Stolen goods were returned. I would forever be grateful that I didn't lose my life due to my curiosity.